there, and welcome to Gems of Wisdom. I'm Teresa Marone, your host, and I'm here with my co-host, Executive Director of Bridget's Place, Lauren Santerre. Join us for the stories of Bridget's Place each week as God transforms the hearts, minds, and lives of women today. Our special guest is April D. DeConnick, the Chair of the Department of Religion at Rice University, and co-writer of Easter in Memory of Her, which will be produced at the Christ Church Cathedral April 4th at 4 p.m. And we're going to be discussing her inspiration, her vision for the future, and what benefits people do receive from attending this wonderful event that's produced in Houston, Texas each year. April is a fascinating person, and we will bring her on in just a few moments. But please join me first in welcoming my co-host, Lauren Santerre. Hey, Lauren.
Hey, Teresa. Good morning. It's really great to be with you today.
Oh, thank you, honey. I always appreciate being with you on our shows. So, Lauren, it's a beautiful day. How are you feeling?
I am feeling really great. I'm excited that spring seems to be dawning here in Houston and making its appearance. I have decided that I am definitely a sunshine girl, so I'm very excited to see it. Last week was rough. I was like, come on, bring on the sunshine. So I am feeling better today, and I hope all of our fellow Houstonians are basking in the sunshine and getting out and enjoying the weather. So.
Well, you know, sun does kind of have an analogy, a sunshiny day. Hello, sunshine. Good day, sunshine. It's one of my favorite songs from the Beatles. So it just kind of uplifts your spirits. And it kind of reminds me of how much your gem of the day uplifts me each week. What have you got for us this week?
Well, you know, I have an interesting one, which is, I think, a little bit deep, but also I think definitely does bring us around to being uplifted. So, you know, I really felt called to share about humility this week. And this has been something that really I've been kind of delving into over the past few days. And, you know, there are so many things that you can say about humility. And I think, you know, the great faith traditions of the world say so many different things about it, and there's so many scriptures about it. And but I found this quote that I really liked, and it says, humility means being able to receive instruction regardless of what you already know. And I would add a little parenthesis on that that says, or think you know, or why you think you are right.
Well, you know, I have to say that definition surprises me. The first half of it, being able to receive information, that doesn't surprise me. But the second half of it kind of does. It kind of takes it in a whole different direction. It kind of means that, you know, listen, even if you think, like you're saying, think you know, but it doesn't really work for me if it's listen if you already know. Do you know what I mean?
I really do. And this is, I really, really do. And, you know, I like to blame a lot of things on my red hair. I do that for many, many things in life. And I get away with it, thankfully. And so this is one more thing that I blame on my red hair. But, you know, I have a little bit of a stubborn streak, and you can ask my mother. She would agree with me.
No, you can ask me.
Exactly. And so, you know, I looked at my name, the meaning for my name, and one of the meanings for my name is stubbornness or something, and I was like, oh, dear God. So, you know, but this really kind of, this quote kind of came home for me this week, and it's just like, you know, we always, not always, but a lot of times we think we know what's right, or we think we know the right way to do something, and I am just right there paddling in the boat on this one, you know, and it's like, I see it so clearly, you know, like the whole world, I just think the whole world should be in the boat with me, you know, and, you know, I've just had a couple of experiences over the past week where, you know, somebody has really jarred me and said, you know, I might have a really good perspective on this issue. And if you could just listen to me, if you could just suspend what you think you know, and maybe consider what I have to offer, there might be another way of doing it, or there might be another way of approaching the situation. And it's just so hard for me, you know? Yeah, solving the problem.
Solve the problem. I get it.
Or creating relationships, you know? Yeah.
Or continuing a conversation. I think that I'm getting passionate about your word of the day, humility. And I think it's a good thing for, it's a good place to start a conversation. I think that that's what you and I are really coming to see that this radio show can be, is a good place to start a conversation. And our guest today can really start a conversation. All you have to do is go to her website. I promise you, you will have a couple of questions. Let's just put it like that. Now, April DeConnick is someone that Lauren, I'll just share with the listeners, knows. Lauren has been involved with some of the projects that April's involved with. But today is my first time to meet April actually on the radio. And I just want to read to you her tagline, giving voice to the oppressed, forbidden, and forgotten. Now, I have to tell you, that gave me chills when I first read it. And as I started working my way through her volumes included on her website, I noticed that she is quite decorated in many ways. She has many designations that can just make your head spin. Chair of the Department of Religion at Rice University, you know, would be enough for most people. But she is a research fellow. She's an associate editor. She's on the faculties of things such as the Center for the Study of Women, Gender, and Sexuality. She's a grant recipient. She's a facility leader. She is members of editorial boards. This woman has been many places and done many things. But the thing that it's kind of like a little jewel in her crown is this beautiful play that she's co-written with Reverend Betty Adam called Easter in Memory of Her. And she's here today on Gems of Wisdom to talk about that. So join me in welcoming April DeConnick. How are you doing, April?
Very good. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here today.
Oh, very good. And is this your favorite time of year, being Easter and your name being April?
I do love spring. I do love spring and the feeling of renewal and starting over. And, of course, the warmth. I'm from Michigan, and so for us, spring was really important because you went from very cold snow to the little crocuses coming up out of the ground and the tulips and so forth. And even as I live in the South now, I still, spring is that time of year when we get to start over again.
Well, absolutely. And that's so important, isn't it? That's the hope and the faith and the theme of your play, which is resurrection, correct?
It is. It is. Very much so.
Well, we had Betty Adam on a couple of weeks ago, and last week we had Becky Baxter and Sonia Brujakis, and they gave us some perspective from, first of all, the initial inspiration. Betty shared that with us and how... Mm-hmm. It just all kind of came about. And then Becky talked about her soul connection with Sonia, and Sonia talked about how she brought in some music from some different aspects and how it became an interactive type of event. So what we want to really talk to you about today, April, is the experience of being in the room and hearing your words come to life and hearing the music. Put yourself in the position of how, or put us in that position, actually. How do you want us to experience your work, and what do you want us to feel?
Well, I'll tell you, every time it's performed, I cry. This is a piece that really comes from the soul. It was probably one of my most inspired kinds of works. It came out of me in about 2 days. of writing and interacting with Betty and then with Sonia and with Becky. All four of us, I would use that metaphor, soul sisters. We work really good together, collaboratively. In fact, when Betty and I began talking about this project, both Becky and Sonia immediately came to our minds as the people that we wanted to work with to bring it to life with the music. So when I sit there and listen to it, I don't hear words that I wrote. I hear words that these women were at the cross. I hear their feelings. I hear the things that they were thinking in terms of standing there, having had a relationship with this man on the cross who was dying, and the kinds of things that they might have been thinking about.
Well, I watched the video on your website that you have of the play, and I was struck by how strongly the ladies that are in the actual mm-hmm. play were feeling. It was more than a theatrical experience, which, I mean, theater is my background, and I'm aware when someone's embodying a character, but this seemed a little deeper. Do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that's why I come away actually a bit shaken following it, because it's real. It's not as if I'm sitting there really watching it. I'm really participating in it. One of the things that I wanted to do was to have that sort of participatory quality, not only in the women who were performing it, but in the audience participating. And so we created, at the end of each of these beautiful monologues that each of the women speak, songs, like chants, that the audience then takes up and becomes part of the experience of that particular woman at the cross. I got the idea for this. I love Taizé. I don't know if you're familiar with this form of worship, but it's from Taizé, France. And it's a worship that focuses on chanting very simple and very beautiful verses over and over and over again so that you get yourself into this real state of meditation and contemplation. And so that was the idea that I wanted to use to bring the audience into a relationship with Jesus through these women and their experiences of him.
To me, that's the most innovative part of this concept, bringing the words to life. Of course, that's, you know, beautiful artistry, but allowing the audience to get into such a deep experience of being part of it is, to me, very innovative. Now, have you found any resistance for maybe some of the more conservative people who are coming to church to experience, you know, an Easter program? Have you seen that, or do people just, like, drop the walls and just get right into it?
Yeah, I would say the latter. I haven't had anyone approach me with any sort of negativity or I didn't like this. Maybe they wouldn't anyway come up and tell me if they didn't like it. But the reactions that I get from people afterward is just they're just in awe. And I have many people that come to me now and say, "This is my Easter. I come to this. This is my Easter." And I mean, that's powerful to think that this performance is only in its third year now, but has already become a staple for some of the you know, the people who've been attending.
Well, yes, it, like I was saying earlier, an innovative, interactive Easter program that's presented with this depth of emotion, right when people really need it. You know, people need to see, as Lauren speaks to so eloquently, there's always hope and faith. And Lauren, I'm going to bring you into this, Lauren. You were speaking about 4 weeks ago on Gems of Wisdom about Easter being your favorite time of year because you love the feeling of renewal. Doesn't this play seem to personify that concept?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think it really does. And I think that, you know, it's just, I love what April said about the emotion of it and the sense of being with the women, you know. And I think that that is what any good piece of writing does, any good piece of liturgy, you know, and this is, I think, a liturgical piece, any good sermon, you know, but any really good sense of pulling us into an event that happened or could happen to us, you know, and I think that is what these women portray, is that, you know, we are called into a relationship with Christ, should we so choose, or God, or, you know, however we find that path, we are, it is a living relationship. I think, you know, God calls us into a living relationship. And so we have that opportunity to experience love fundamentally. And I think renewal comes through knowing that the love of God is ever present with us. You know, there's always hope.
Yes, that's a beautiful theme. Now, let's just refresh our listeners' mind, April, where you're coming from. Give us kind of the backdrop of the play.
You mean in terms of where the play is set?
Right. What
is that you mean?
What's going on with where are the women starting, their starting place with their characters?
Sure. Sure. So the narrator opens up this piece with just simply a line from the Gospel of Luke. The women who knew Jesus and had followed him from Galilee stood by the cross watching. And so what we have is we just have a cross in the sanctuary. And we have the five women process in and take their place standing around the cross. And as each woman speaks her words, she stands and she holds a candle. And then after she finishes speaking, then she draws the congregation into singing with her. And then we move to the next woman through the five women. And my thought here was to not present a single image of Jesus, but to present Jesus as he might have appeared uniquely to these different women, so that his interaction with his mother and his relationship with his mother would have been very different from his relationship with Mary Magdalene or Mary of Bethany or the Samaritan woman at the well or the woman who breaks the nard over his head and anoints him. So I was trying to think about how those relationships may have differed and how he may have shared with these women kind of unique teachings. And for that, I went back into the biblical story, and I actually sat with each of these women in the stories that are told about them and tried to envision what they were thinking or may have been thinking.
Was this an idea that you had had over the years that just kind of came upon you as being time to bring it to fruition, or was this an inspiration that happened to you just like overcome you?
That's a good question. It happened Betty asked me. I had no idea I was going to do anything like this. Betty and I went out for lunch, and we were chit-chatting together because we're old friends. And she said, you know, Bridget's Place, we're really looking to do something special for women at Easter. And
wow.
So I said, oh, well, I have an idea. And it just popped into my head. What about the cross and having the women speak, you know, they're at the cross, what they're thinking. And so she said, well, that sounds like a neat idea. And I just literally ran home. I lived across the street from where we were eating and began writing. And I think I drafted the first three women in, you know, a day. I mean, it didn't take long. And the inspiration,
you know, when,
there.
When you have that kind of inspiration and it just starts pouring forth, doesn't it seem divinely inspired?
Yeah, I mean, there's something special. You almost feel as an instrument. I mean, you feel like you're
sure.
being guided. you know, to do something that maybe you wouldn't normally do. I mean, I'm a professor. This is not something that I would normally do. Normally, I write academic books, you know.
I teach your resume.
But, you know, this sort of creative experience, and I mean, it's been so wonderful that it's really something that I think I want to continue to do in the future, to think about ways that I might be able to translate sort of my professional knowledge
back into
the church to tell the stories that I think have been forgotten, the stories that have sort of dropped out of our traditional retelling and our traditional memory and our traditional liturgies, and bring them back and say, look, you know, look what this gives us that we didn't have before.
What strikes me, I want to just interject this for a second, because I bet our listeners are feeling the same way I am. What you're doing is you're bringing a relevance and a humanity to some stories that a lot of people might find as ancient history and very stiff, and maybe even have turned them in their minds into a metaphor for today's living, or something that, like a parable. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And the way that I saw your work come alive in this play, I could relate to that woman as something, you know, sorrow that I've felt. And it just brings these stories into today's world. And I think that is the most important thing that I took away from it.
Well, thank you. That means a lot to me for that you felt that way. Because that certainly is my intention, if I'm intended, you know. And the woman, surprisingly, the woman that was most kind of difficult for me to write was Mary the Mother. And,
really?
You know, I have a son, and he's 11 now, and when I wrote this, he was younger. But thinking about being a mother standing there and watching her son be executed was really difficult for me.
Also, her fear and trepidation of the probably at least a year, maybe longer, of him doing things that she knew was going to get him in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
You know, she probably had bitten her tongue from, you know, time and time. You know how we have to do with our kids.
Sure. Well, and, you know, I, you know, again, going back to the stories and sitting with the biblical stories for a while and thinking about, okay, so, you know, the story in Luke where he goes off to the Jerusalem temple, he basically runs away. As a mother, well, I mean, that, you know, your child suddenly being lost, how would you have felt there? And, you know, thinking through these sorts of episodes, as you say, that sort of lead up to his death, it was really emotional for me. It was a very Mary the Mother was probably the most difficult for me to write.
Did you write her last?
I did her first.
You did her
first. I did her first.
You're one of the
ones.
Yeah. Broccoli first, chocolate later.
Yep.
That would be you.
I guess I didn't know she was going to be so difficult to write, you know. And then when I started really feeling her, you know, and being a mom and just knowing the sorts of fears that moms have as they try to protect their children, as they try to nurture them and foster them, it really comes out, I think, in her narrative.
I think it did too. And, you know, Becky and Sonia were so attached to this emotionally as well. Becky was speaking about the woman with Nard and talking about how she really related to that, to the point where, you know, she was thinking about, you know, even the smell of this perfume wafting off of him at the time that they were there, you know, in the final moment. And, you know, it struck me what a very, very personal project this started as, and how the impact that it can make can be, you know, almost universal. I mean, this story is being told all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
So what a legacy, April.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. I'm so glad that it moved you. That just makes me feel it was all worth it.
Well, I believe that it struck a lot of people. So now the difficult question, April.
Yeah.
What's next? Where do you go from here with this project or another?
Well, with this project, I think that Becky and Sonia and I really just need to sit down and figure out what we want to do. It's been very successful at Christ Church Cathedral. The question is, will it be equally successful other places? How do we get this service performed at other places? So, you know, I would love to see this become kind of a tradition of Holy Saturday, just as
Me
we
too.
Have sort of a tradition for Good Friday, and we have a tradition for Easter Sunday. This would be a nice spot. And Betty and I talked a lot about when this should be performed. And we really felt like we wanted it.
I noticed.
We wanted it to have its own space, like its own liturgical space, and not be competing with what is traditionally done on Good Friday. And, you know, Holy Saturday is a really interesting day because it's the day of really silence. It's the day when really
sure.
nothing happens in terms of liturgy or churches, and because it's the day Jesus is dead. And so we really felt that this was probably a good spot to place it in terms of its performance, because the women have been silenced all these years. And so this seemed like a good spot for them to emerge. So that's
you
my
know,
hope. My hope is, yeah.
I think it's brilliant. And I noticed, I only assume that you'll be doing opening remarks at the performance April 4th.
Right.
Is that a tradition as well?
I usually do, just to set the stage for the people who haven't attended it before, just so that they know
mm-hmm.
what's going on. I try to
right.
keep my words very brief.
Well, you know, the video that I saw on your website, which, you know,
I think that was the first year, yeah.
Exactly. But it's aprildeconic.com. And just click on Easter in Memory of Her, and you'll see lots of information, among lots of other information. before I bring Lauren back on to tell about ticket information and how we're going to be throwing a little party directly after, do you have any parting words for our listeners today, April, about the importance of tradition?
I guess I would say tradition is important as long as we continue to revive it and renew it. And if we allow tradition to manage us, then we lose growing and moving forward. And yet if we totally detach ourselves from tradition, then we don't have that sort of foundation to root ourselves in. And so I guess what I'm hoping that this Easter in Memory of Her does is kind of both of those things. Is it has its roots, I think, firmly in the biblical stories, but it also innovates and kind of renews tradition.
I agree. I think you hit the nail on the head. And I know that you always, from your website, you seem to be always crossing back and forth over the bridge of revering tradition and breaking tradition.
Right.
And that's
right.
The fascinating part about you. You are not in any box I've ever seen before.
Oh, thank you. That's quite a compliment.
Well, I'm glad you take it that way. And I'd like to have you back on the show to speak about some of your other projects at a time after Easter, if you're willing.
I would love to. I'd love to.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you so much, April DeConnick, co-writer of Easter in Memory of Her, and we are so looking forward to that performance this year. Lauren,
tell our listeners how they can get to the performance and how we handle our ticketing.
Yes, wonderful. We would love to have you join us on April 4th at 4 p.m. The performance will be at Christ Church Cathedral, located at 1117 Texas Avenue. And you may find out more information at bridgetsplace.org. The performance is free and open to the public, but we would greatly appreciate your kind donations to help us fund the performance. And we look forward to seeing you. As Teresa mentioned, we will have a fabulous little after party this year featuring the co-writers, April and Betty, and the whole cast of the performance to have a great little Q&A session about everything that goes into making the performance and their experiences, so you can have more behind-the-scenes information. So we hope that you will come out on April 4th at 4 p.m. at Christ Church Cathedral.
Wonderful, wonderful. And you can donate to Easter in Memory of Her at bridgetsplace.org. And Lauren, as executive director, is always sending out great newsletters. In fact, they're works of art. And you can sign up to join our newsletter at bridgetsplace.org or join us on Facebook. We have quite a growing community there of people who want to not only make a difference, but commune and communicate with people of like mind. So join us there. Lauren, any last words for our listeners today?
I hope that everyone has a great week and enjoys the beautiful weather.
And thanks for the gem of the day, humility. I think we can all benefit from a small dose of humility.
And thank you to April.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much. All right, so this is Gems of Wisdom, and we will see you next week.